everyone. This is Cheryl Castile, and welcome to The Exchange. My guests in the studio today are representing one of the arts that I have become very fond of in probably the last 10 years. Part of that is I worked at a theater, and I have to admit that prior to that, I didn't know much about theater, except that I had gone a few times. But certainly grew to love what's happening in the Acadiana area in theater and have grown to really enjoy theater. My guest today are representing a production that's coming up, The Glass Mendacity, that will be performed at the Delta Grand Theater in historic downtown Opelousas. And we have the director here, Jody Powell.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jody. And we have two of the actors. We have Miss Mary Gail Lamonte de Villiers. Welcome, Miss Mary Gail.
Oh, thank you, Carol.
And then we have John Schneider here also.
Good afternoon.
So, yeah, it's great to have you all here. We're going to talk a little bit later in the show about the production. But first, I would like folks just to kind of get to know who all of you are that may not know. And, John, I am going to start with you.
Okay.
Because I have to say I absolutely loved your performance in 18 Victoria in Cody Daigle's recent original piece.
Very nice of you to say. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it was very, very good. In a production like that, for people that did not see it, that and I'm not sure if I'm going to say this correctly, but it was between a staged reading and a full set production. And I don't even know if that would be a full set, but that might have been – like I saw it as the full set production until Cody told me no.
Yeah, no, you're not – far from the truth there. I mean, technically, we set out to do a stage reading, but I think there were a couple of people who wondered if that was the production. It's not far from it. I mean, the way it was presented would be similar to, you know, how it would be presented if it were, you know, a full production. Probably more elaborate set, you know, and no scripts. That'd be really the only difference.
Exactly. You know, for folks that didn't see it, how it was set up was the three characters were sitting on chairs, and there was a simple kind of set behind them, but you all did all of the lines from the play, but sitting. Mm-hmm. And what I'm curious about is how is the preparation for doing a piece like that different? You know, and I guess maybe I'm thinking in the mindset. What is the preparation like for doing a production like that versus when everybody's moving here and there and there's a full set?
Well, I mean, it's different in that it's scaled down, certainly. I mean, we got together and we read it a few times and we didn't have any formal director. We just kind of governed ourselves. And, I mean, Cody, of course, you know, led the way. He knew what he wanted to hear. It was very streamlined. I mean, when you don't have to worry about walking around, you don't have to worry about memorizing lines. And
you
you're comfortable.
I'm sorry. Do you have to worry about your neck up more? You know, your facial expressions? I mean,
No, I wouldn't say that I'd do anything personally any different than, than I would in a full-scale production.
Yeah.
There's just less to encumber you. You know, you can focus on the language more and, you know, really have a nice communion with the audience.
Yeah. You know, because I want to tell you something. For in that production, there were times where you were, like, holed up in a hotel room and then back at your own place. And how you did that. And I'm not very visual, but you were there. You know, you were in those places even though those places were not set up around you.
Yeah. I mean, not moving, you know, it doesn't really make much difference. You know, you're not there anyway if we were doing a full-scale production. So, you know, that sense of intention is always going to be there. And I'm glad to know that that kind of came through.
Yeah,
I'm happy to hear you say that.
Yeah, it was really that was a wonderful piece.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a wonderful job that you did in that. Theater came into your life when? How old were you?
Oh, well.
And I guess, and I'm curious how.
I guess for a lot of us, it kind of comes into your life at a young age, you know, in the living room. But formally, I did my first show when I was 16 in Opelousas. That was the first thing I did on stage.
At Opelousas Little Theater?
Opelousas Little Theater, yeah.
Ah. Mm-hmm. And so what prompted you to, hey, I think I'll go do a
You know,
audition.
I was always, you know, class clown, kind of the, you know, I was always performing any chance I could just in my life. People had always suggested it. And I just saw something in the paper that was advertising auditions for this thing that was coming up. And decided to pull the trigger on it, and I'd been, you know, more or less active in it since. You know,
what was the first show?
It was called Showcase 92. It's something that they do.
Oh, yes, they're Opelousa Showcase.
Yeah, yeah. This was, I think, the first one. And it was done in 1992.
Was Cheryl Nett involved then or no?
I don't think so.
Okay,
no.
All right.
Not as far as I can remember.
That's why when I remember her being involved in that.
Yeah, okay. it was kind of a mishmash of kind of a combination of you know, between hee-haw and
it's a variety show. It's a variety
yeah, there was some dancing, some joke telling, some acting, you know.
Yeah, and what did you
we
do?
We did our best. We did a few sketches, some vaudevillian things. I had to do, I remember a pantomime. I was a priest in a confessional, and there was no word spoken. I just had to go through a confession based on my reactions and kind of create a dialogue that wasn't there just through, you know, pantomime. And there was a couple other, you know, little sketch things. I really don't even remember that well. But, you know, it was an interesting way to start. You know, we got to kind of wet my bill a little bit doing a little comedy and a variety of different things in one show.
Did you get involved in school then, theater?
We didn't have anything in my school. We didn't have speech. We didn't have a drama club. Nothing. Just me getting sent to the office was pretty much
it. That was your theater. Yeah. And your folks had to be in the audience. Too bad, huh?
Yeah. That, you know, like when I was – I remember in elementary school, there's a project a lot of kids have to do. If they take spelling once a week, they'll have to write a story using 10 spelling words. Well, yeah. Yeah, you know, every Friday, everyone would kind of wait to see what I do because I would write this one-act show pretty much and get up in front of the class and perform it.
Yeah.
So I guess it manifested itself in whatever way it could, even though we didn't have any formal theater.
Well, then how about in college?
College was, I mean, that was a good time. I was at LSUE initially, and right when I'd got there, they'd started to do some things in theater, get more involved in competitive theater. You know, there's something called the I think it's the Irene Ryan Award you get. It's American College Theater Festival.
Irene Ryan.
ACT,
Beverly Hillbillies, Irene Ryan?
Yeah, her,
oh,
yes.
Okay,
yeah,
very nice.
Yeah,
okay.
Died on stage, I think.
That
I don't know why I thought of that. But
I mean, that was her origin was stage.
Yes, she was a big stage performer and a good one, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they decided to get involved in that. And, you know, we did Of Mice and Men and took it on the road and competed against, you know, USL at the time and LSU and McNeese and Louisiana Tech. And, you know, we did pretty well with it. And then I moved on to USL at the time where I met Cody and we did some nice productions here. You know, I was very proud of the stuff we did here.
Was your focus in school on performing arts?
At the time, it was. Yeah, yeah. I was talked into majoring in theater by the head of the department at LSUE, Stanley Coleman. He kind of talked me into, you know, putting my focus there, and I'm glad he did. You know, I got to meet people and I got to learn a little bit more than I would have just kind of doing it part time. You know, you not only learn by doing it in the classroom, but doing these shows, which I crammed a lot into my time in college.
And your focus mainly was on acting?
It was, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I did some directing and, you know, you sort of have to learn it all, you know, set design and all that, you know. But, acting was what I was interested in.
And then what was the next? Because I know there was some time in New York. There was time where you were at Oxford.
Yeah.
What came first?
Well, I packed up, moved to New York. This was in 98. And I stayed there almost 5 years, 4.5 years, with my fiance, and then my wife, who was an actress at the time, and she kind of got discouraged. So she kind of helped me along the way, and support, and you know, did some nice things there.
What stands out from your time in New York?
The thing that stands out the most was towards the end. I wasn't even doing straight theater anymore. I was doing long form improv with there's a theater called the Upright Citizens Brigade. They'd started in New York. There's one in Los Angeles now. It's kind of like a second city.
Sure, yeah.
But it's New York's version. Yeah. Amy Poehler, Matt Besser, some of these guys, they'd started it.
Yeah.
And it's a school, and it's also, you know, a performing theater.
Sure.
And
the process to get involved, is it an audition process that you have to do, or how does
– You take the classes, and, you know, if you're good enough, you'll get picked on these teams.
Oh,
kind of like
it.
Second City. You represent these improv teams.
Yeah.
And it was far different from anything I've ever done before. It was very satisfying, you know, scary and everything else, because I don't know if you're familiar with it, but long-form improv, you're basically doing a 30-minute nonstop show.
Huh.
That is typically funny, you know.
Yeah.
No script, nothing. It's seven or eight people. You take a few suggestions and you go into this show using this format.
Yeah.
It's got an arc and everything. It was amazing to watch, so I wanted to get involved in it. And that's the thing I miss the most, doing that.
Yeah.
From New York.
Would you learn about yourself during the time you were there?
Oh, boy, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Let me think about that. No, I learned that I could. Here's the thing about New York, if you're coming from Louisiana, it's a culture shock in the beginning, a major culture shock.
Yeah.
The city will suck the energy out of you, or it can energize you. So the ability to go from it dragging me down to feeding off of it and you know, becoming active and productive, I guess.
And that's a tough balancing act.
It is,
right?
Yeah, it is. It is. It was 6 months of depression.
Yeah.
Followed by 4 years of, I don't want to go home.
Yeah.
Then family thing happened. Then
I
didn't have a choice in the matter. But everything works out well.
It does. And what a great experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having been there. I think too there are so many people. It's interesting in this state and really in this part of Louisiana, there are so many talented people, and I don't care what art form we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
and I think that it's, you know, so many folks have gone other places to pursue whatever that artistic career was.
Mm-hmm.
But so much of it happens right here, too.
I'll be honest with you.
The opportunities. And
the most satisfying work I've ever done were the things I've done here with these nice ladies and with Cody and the stuff I did in college. A lot of it far outshined any of the productions I did in New York
because
you know, like you said, there's some talent here and those people find each other.
Yeah,
they form a little community and you find yourselves working with the same people that are great.
Yeah.
And you're all building towards the same goal, which is improving yourself and then trying to take it to another level. So it made for some interesting theater. It made for some nice nice productions and a good growth period.
Yeah. And I think here, too, and I guess this is for all of you, this is an area that, you know, I'm not an actor or really involved in theater, although I have stage handed a couple times. But I think that there are actors in this area of that caliber where people really are pushed, you know,
mm-hmm.
and pushed to get better. Right?
Absolutely. There's a lot more opportunity today now, too, in Lafayette, and more talented people being drawn to those new theater companies here. And you just, like John said, learn from each other and work off of each other.
Because I think, you know, before we came on the air, John made a comment where, you know, when we were talking about what are we going to talk about today and really how theater has – what's the difference now? You know, I know Mary Gail, you are the elder spokesman here.
Oh,
although
you
noticed
that?
You're still a young chick.
Sure.
But I mean, when you know, the thing is that John's comment was there's more. You know, and I'm thinking, no, Miss Mary Gail, when you started your involvement in theater, I don't know, was that as an adult? Was it as a child?
I was in the eighth grade when I saw my first stage play.
Okay.
At Opelousas High School, they brought in a company. I assume it was a company. All I know is that we were told we were going to this play.
Yeah.
And we did, of course. And my impression was, oh, my goodness, I want to do that. Oh, you know what? I can do that. How I knew that, I don't know. But that was – and we did a play in the senior year, as most people do.
Yeah.
And that was the extent of my theater involvement, except that the Opelousas Little Theater had a thing called the Junior Playhouse that they were sponsoring.
Mm.
But that now, well, we did one play, I recall, and that was kind of the end of that. And then when I went to college, I got involved then. But there was nothing else that I knew of, certainly in Opelousas. And my world was pretty much limited to Opelousas when I was in high school.
Sure, sure. Then you have stayed consistently involved with theater in the area since then?
Well, spottedly, I would say, because I had two little children,
yeah.
and that kept me out of the theater for a while.
Yeah.
And
we should mention one of them is Jody that's here with us.
Oh, yes,
today.
She certainly is. That's true, yes.
Yeah, yeah, so it trickled down. But I'm curious what, you know, you being involved in theater right now in your life, too, what have – do you see a difference? Or what changes have you seen in theater in the Acadiana area?
Oh,
between
well, it's just a marvelous difference. As Jody was saying, there's so much theater now in Lafayette. I mean, there's just so many different companies and these groups of people, and they're just wonderful.
Yeah.
Just fabulous. Just so much. It's just amazing to me what is available now. And like I said, in my day, what was available in Opelousas was when the little theater did a play, that was it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I don't – well, they started in the 40s, as I recall. I once did a study on that, but I've forgotten the exact dates. And there were some other things I recall. Once there was something at the high school that involved all of the community or most people who were interested in doing it. And it was kind of like a variety show. And that brought a lot of people in because they were people that were well known in the community.
That's right.
And that was something that happened, but that was just a one-time thing.
But, you know, you think about, and then, you know, places like Abbey Players and, right. you know, IPAL in New Iberia. I mean, those have been, you know, pretty big parts of those communities for, you know, for years and years. And I'm curious, though, I've even seen in the last 2 to 3 years that the number of theater companies and the amount of theater going on has just taken off. And I'm curious what you all think is the reason for that. What do you think's happening around here?
I think the ingredients were always there. I mean, first of all, you have a college town. You know, you have a hub city that you know, because it's a college town, you got all these people coming in, you know, from different walks of life. The art and music scene has always been kind of strong here.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was only a matter of time for that to evolve into, you know, performing arts and theater, you know, for that to start to grow.
Yeah.
You know, everything has always been here.
That's right.
It just kind of evolved.
Yeah, there's been a stronger collaboration in the past couple of years between the community theaters.
That's a big important point, that collaboration.
Right, a collaboration amongst ourselves, but also with UL.
Yeah.
You know, whoever it was that came in at UL and thought, let's reach out to the community. Let's not keep our interns and our students here on the campus. Let's get them out into the community. The other thing is we have a couple of venues. You know, you have Cité des Arts, you have Theater 810, who open their doors to people who want to come in and do shows.
Yeah.
It's not just in-house productions.
Yeah.
So we had Cité des Arts, a multicultural venue, who can bring in any kind of show by any kind of company. That's very inviting. And just in the last year with Theater 810, that started out as just a rehearsal space, is now hosting many companies coming in there too. So, you know, it's not just that people are developing their own companies, but that they have a place to perform as well.
Well, and I think too, Jody, you know, your involvement is very strong also with the Eunice Players Theater. And, you know, when I think about Eunice Players has brought productions to CITE. You're now this is not a Eunice Players production, but there's a number of people who do theater there that are now going to be doing a production at Delta Grand in Opelousas. And then folks, you know, John, you were just at Theater 810. I mean, that to me is a really exciting thing to see happening.
Yeah,
you know,
we're all actors looking for a stage.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the other thing is, besides some of the set theaters is, and I know Jaron Shakesnyder has been one of the people who has done it, but to do, you know, theater in homes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so it's a real, I don't know, it's just been an interesting thing for me to watch, and not being right in the middle of it, I just am always curious, like, what the heck is allowing that to happen? And I think it's the mindset.
It's the mindset. I did a show called Rabbit Hole with Nathaniel Trahan, Nathaniel T. Productions, and we did it in his house. And it created a whole different environment for the actors and the audience. The audience followed us from room to room, and we just acted within the walls of the house as if it were our set. You know, the kitchen was our kitchen. We opened the refrigerator to get something to drink. We washed dishes in the sink, you know. We didn't have to build anything. And it was very experiential for all involved.
Have you ever done that as an audience member? Have you ever gone to something like that?
No.
Because I have.
No, that's, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, that not a white
I was an audience member, and I thought it was fascinating because we asked at first, you know, where are we supposed to stand or sit? And they said, anywhere you want to. And we said, well, suppose we're in the actor's way. And they said, you'll move.
Yeah.
And sure enough, you know, I was standing in the kitchen, and she went to wash dishes, and it was like I wasn't there. She pretended, or, you know, to her, I was not there. I just had to move out of the way.
Did you have a Did you have a desire to want to interact, whether it's to help pick something up or to?
In a way, but yeah. not to a great degree.
Most yeah. people said they felt like a fly on the wall.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
yeah,
because it was a family story, mm-hmm. and we were in a family home, so it felt real.
Yeah. You know?
And they felt like they were eavesdropping on our private conversation.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Neat.
Get into that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was different for you getting into character? Was there a difference in that setting versus, and I don't mean like a typical stage, but what people would consider being a, you know, a stage you would go to in a community or at the university?
It's physically, you didn't have the sort of green room and dressing room that you'd normally do in a theater. You know, we had a little
laundry room.
Laundry room, basically, yeah, that we were in.
Yeah.
You know, and then you shared the bathroom with the audience, you know. But being prepared to not look at somebody in the audience or not connect with somebody, you know, that you knew. And like Mom said, you know, the audience was going to move. And if they didn't move, we just moved around them. You know, we just worked around whoever was there.
Yeah.
So, and just, and we wanted the audience to have that sense that they weren't in the way either. So we tried to make that movement natural so that they wouldn't feel awkward either.
Yeah. I just think fun for an actor.
And there was a scene where Andre Trahan, who played a teenage boy in the play, he was not in the house at the time, and he entered the house to talk to the family. And when he came in the house in the middle of scene two, you know, people thought, oh, this guy's arrived late, you know, but he was an actor.
He came to watch the show.
Yeah. And then he seamlessly just fit right in.
But
everybody I talked to said they got it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a great, you know, for people to really see theater in a setting like that. It's a really wonderful experience.
Well, and as an actor, I've done, 25 or so plays. This was the first time I got to do something like that, to do something different. You know, I mean, I've played a variety of characters, but this whole setting, this whole lead up to it was all different. It was a wonderful experience.
Well, we're just going to take a short break. We're going to listen to this song. It's a conga, and it is from the Glass Mendacity that's coming up at the Delta Grand Theater, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes. you that may still be dancing, go ahead and continue on as we get with the show. That kind of music always makes you want to move. If you're just joining us, this is The Exchange on KRVS 88.7 FM or on the web at krvs.org. We are public service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. And we are listener supported, so keep us in mind throughout the year when you have maybe a few extra dollars that you can put our way. There is a safe, secure website. Website that we have that you can pledge, or you can always call us here too at the station. My guests today in the studio are three talented members of the theater community here in Acadiana. We have Jody Powell, Mary Gail Lamonte DeVillier, and John Snyder. And we've just been talking about some of their involvements with theater, and they will be in a production a week from this weekend, opening June 6th at the Delta Grand Theater in Opelousas of the Glass Mendasa. You all have been involved in theater for quite a while. And first, Jody, was Mom's involvement instrumental in your involvement?
Yes. I have a picture. I was 2 years old. She was in a play and drugged me down to the theater. And I was sitting on the steps, and they took this cute little picture. Of course, that was not any involvement, but my history goes back to age two. Then at age six, I was in the Cheaper by the Dozen. She was in it. This was at Opelousas Little Theater. We were recently moved back to Opelousas, and she got immediately involved in the theater, or fairly quickly involved in theater. The whole family was in the play, actually. And
And the dog.
Yes, yeah.
Except Gino, because he wasn't born yet. But anyway, and then unfortunately I didn't do anything again until high school, because Opelousas Little Theater was not continually active at that time. And when I was in high school, they were open for a little bit, and I did George M., the musical, just as a little chorus piece. And didn't get to do anything else until college, and went to LSUE. Like John, they had an active theater community at the time, but it was not Stanley Coleman. Then it was Steve Gimple and Richard Beer who were leading the drama department.
Okay.
Got to do three or four plays then, and it was that living in Eunice that reintroduced me to Eunice Players Theater.
Got it.
And I
okay.
did Oliver, the summer musical, in 1978. My parents had been season ticket holders for Eunice Players Theater, and I had been to a few plays there, but didn't really get active in it until I was in college and living in Eunice.
I mean, you know, you think about the importance of those types of theaters, because, like, for John's a good example, not having it in school, you know, if there had not been a theater around. Yeah.
Yeah, didn't either. And like Mom, too, my high school experience was limited to Opelousas, you know.
Yeah.
And even in college, it was, you know, living in Eunice, going to school, had a little job. You know, we weren't traveling a whole lot.
Yeah, you know, another thing that's valuable, like at the university level, especially a place like UL, is that they have budgets, like, you know, a good budget, you know, for nice sets. They have a fly, you know, people can fly in and out. You know, the size of the stage and what they put into it, you know, sometimes it's professional quality. I mean, it just looks beautiful.
That's right. Yeah. And I'm going to go back to what you said earlier, too, Jody, about UL's involvement now, really, pretty strongly with the community. You know, I think of some productions that involve people that are connected to Theater 810, then do them, you know, at UL also. And, you know, then you look at the connection, like companies like Wanderlust, you know, they go back and forth mm-hmm. between a large university setting versus some of the smaller theater settings. It's nice, you know, to have those options for that. What is it that challenges you in theater? I mean, you've all been doing theater for a while. What is there still some challenges out there that it's like, I'm going to do that because, for whatever reason, it's going to challenge you in a certain way?
That's an interesting point. I was thinking about this earlier. Growing up or coming up, you know, learning to do this, that's all you do is you stretch yourself and you challenge yourself. You know, as a young actor, 19, 20 years old in school, you try on these different roles and you know, you just try bending your ways in ways that, you know, you maybe naturally don't bend. There comes to a point when, you know, if you're looking to pursue it professionally, where you have to stop doing that. And if you want to try to find work, you got to find the one or two things that you do best and just stick with that.
Because
that's how you get work.
That's
you know,
right.
You can't be 30 years old 32 years old, like signing up for classes. And, you know, if you want to do this professionally,
you
got to know what your limitations are. But yeah, for like me, now that I'm back home and I'm back here, I'm again doing it for fun. And it's fun to stretch again.
Yeah.
So,
no, I would think so.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the fun stuff, you know, just trying to find out what you, and you find things, you know, some, I always had a problem with sympathetic characters. I never could do them before.
Yeah.
I could do unsympathetic characters, no problem. But having, you know, kind of tried on a few of them, I found, you know, a comfortability level and to where I can kind of pull it off somewhat. And you do that by trying on different things and by stretching yourself. There's a time and place to do it. And for me now, you know, that time has come again.
Yeah. Did having kids change how you approach art?
Yes.
Yeah.
It made me more emotional.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's I'm kind of a cold fish, to be honest with you. I'm not a guy who's really in touch with his emotions. But, you know, when you have kids, that's how you tug at my heartstrings. You know, if you tell me about kids or tragedy involving kids or a story about your kids, and I can relate. So it kind of opened up some this emotional pathways that I never, you know, those neurons started firing.
Exactly. I mean, because, you know, I've seen just so many different visual artists. It's interesting to watch how their style of art changes when they have their first child.
Oh, yeah.
And some of it, for a couple of people I know, was very dramatic, you know, and all of a sudden what they started painting
I'll
and
bet.
What started coming out of them. And so, you know, I'm curious of that with with theater, and that would make sense that it's the emotional part of that, you know. How about you, Miss Mary Gale?
Well, what I was thinking of is one of the things that has happened with me. There are things, characters I would like to have portrayed that's gone now because I'm too old to do them.
So
age is a factor.
We can't Photoshop you on stage.
No. You know, for example,
a good makeup person would.
They'd have to be really good. I always tell John I wanted to do this play. Well, the first time I saw John, he was 16 years old. I don't remember. He was on the Opelousas Little Theater stage. I don't think it was that showcase thing. I think it was an actual role.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh my God, is this kid good? And after curtain call, I called him over to me, and I said, come here, young man. I don't know if you know how good you are, but I know how good you are. And who am I? I don't know that much.
But
that was so obvious. So I'm so delighted to see. And I'm so excited that I get to be in a play with John.
Yeah.
Because I told him at that time, I said, you know, there's a play I've always wanted to do. It's called Five Finger Exercise. I would do it with you. And I had not seen anybody else on stage that I thought, that's, you know, it sounds like I'm so great, I have to have, you know, this great person.
Sure, yeah, yeah. But you
I hadn't seen anybody that I thought could do that role.
Yeah. So you never hit the kiss button.
That's right.
Definitely warm person.
What is that? What's that piece about?
Oh, it's so heavy and so dark. In fact, I watched it recently.
So it's been done as a film also?
Yes, it was done as a film with Rosalind Russell and Jack Hawkins.
Oh, okay.
And
it's called Five what?
Five Finger Exercise.
Okay.
And I don't know why I wanted to do it because when I read it, it was so depressing. I read the script and thought, oh, my word in heaven, what was I thinking of? But it's a wonderful piece. It really is. But I'm glad I never got to do it because it's simply too depressing. but anyway, there are some roles that I thought, I just would love to do that role. But time passed, and it didn't come along. And so now, you know, now it's too late. In fact, I'm pretty sure this is going to be my swan song. I just can't imagine.
Well, we probably not.
Well,
not if I have anything to say about it.
So,
we've had a great give-and-take relationship over the years. I've directed her in, seven? Is this our seventh show?
Probably at least seven.
So she's done a few without
me. How does that relationship work? Has that always been smooth?
She's great.
Yeah.
First of all, she knows what she's doing.
Yeah,
I don't have to tell her a whole lot. She's got a great sensibility about her. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and she supports everything I do. And as a director, if I'm missing something and she sees it, she can tell me and I can take it.
Yeah.
And, you know, she takes every direction I give her.
Sure.
You know, so she takes it from me, too.
Yeah, my style is always collaborative.
Yeah. Is there a role that you have played in your life that's like, oh, I am so – what a great role that was.
Oh, gee, maybe Amanda. Maybe Amanda in Glass Menagerie. I played it twice. I played it in 75 in Opelousas and in 84 in Eunice. And in 75, my son, oldest son, Sammy, was the gentleman caller, and my girlfriend's daughter was Laura. And that was a wonderful – thing.
What was it about that character
Amanda?
That grabbed you? Yeah.
Oh,
what'd
gosh.
You like
I guess the way she approached her situation. I just could feel it. Not that I had ever been in that kind of situation, but I just understood her.
Yeah.
And Dr. Falk, I think was his name, who saw, he was a professor at LSUE.
Charles Faust.
Faust, that was it. Well, anyway, and I recall so much that he came to see it when I did it in Eunice. He came and he told me afterwards, he said, you know, I saw you in 75 in Opelousas and I came to see this tonight because I wanted to see if you played her any differently. And I said, did you think I did? And he said, in ways. And I said, I really wasn't sure. I think I understood her better, though.
Ah.
I really did.
Yeah.
And was what I loved about doing it in unison 84 was that Jody played Laura. So that was a great thing. We got to do a play together.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's some real history. Mm-hmm. Jody, if you were given the choice, would you opt more to want to direct than to act?
Oh, no. Acting is my first love.
Yeah, because you mm-hmm. seem to direct quite a bit, huh?
I do. Some shows I just want to see done,
okay.
you know, and some people I just want to work with, and the best way to do that is to direct.
Yeah, yeah.
But acting is my first love. If somebody would put me in a play every other month, that's all I would do.
Is there a role out there that you have played that just like, man, that was great. I always so glad I got to do that.
Emily in Our Town. I really, really liked that role. I wanted it back then, excuse me, and I got to do it. And, you know, I think it was the first role I latched on to that had a real name to it and a real story behind it, you know. And then actually I had wanted to do Laura in 1975, mm-hmm. but I was a little too young at the time, and so I was really grateful to be able to do it in 1984 when I did. I was the right age. It was the right setting. We had a good director. You know, my mom playing my mom.
Yeah.
It all worked. And over the years, just last year I played, what's her name? Forgot my character's name already, on Golden Pond. And that wasn't somebody that I had always wanted to play, but once I read the script.
You played the
Ethel.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you did? Ethel. Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But what I really want to do, if you want to talk about the challenge of theater in Lafayette, I'd like to get paid.
You know what? We talk about that a lot.
Yeah. You know, we talked about how much theater there is in Lafayette, how many people there are working in the industry, but we're still all volunteer.
That's right.
You know, and I think it's time for it to be a paying industry, something that adds to the economy in a different way.
Yeah. It would be nice to have ongoing. There was a time, and it would be nice to see those start up again, because it's when I was at CTAN, Gwen Richard with Acadian Arts Council, with Acadian Center for the Arts now. But she had started meetings, getting all the different theater groups together. And, you know, that was one thing that people really wanted to focus on. Now, it didn't continue meeting. I don't know. Then I wasn't there anymore, so I'm not sure what happened. But That's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we should mention that we actually did get paid when we did Glass Mendacity at Cité, because Nathaniel T. Productions was backing us, and he paid us.
And he paid all you. See, mm-hmm. that's a wonderful thing.
You know, it wasn't a whole lot, but it was enough to call it a compensation.
That's right.
You know, and that was his focus, to be sure that the cast and crew got paid, because, you know, lighting people, stage managers, there's skill there too.
That's right.
And they deserve the compensation too.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think that people that aren't around a theater all the time when a production is coming into being have no idea how many hours that each person, you know, really takes out of their life and puts into that one production. You know?
Right. And we're all doing it as a second job. It's our hobby. We love it. We're going to keep doing it, you know, even though we're not getting paid for it. But, you know, the college is training people to be paid in the industry. So why can't they stay in Lafayette, keep the talent here? And I say Lafayette, you know, there's a lot of theater in the outlying area also. You mentioned some of them. You know, let's not forget all those theaters out there where people are trying to work too.
Yeah, that's right. You know, that's a great challenge to put out to the creative community out there, you know, mm-hmm. that's something that continues to be looked at, you know. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask Jody, did you know that I played Emily's mother in college?
No, I've forgotten that.
Yeah.
There's another family connection.
Well, and in this play, she's playing a...
Can you tell people about, Jody, about, you know, who might not be familiar with The Glass Mendacity? What give them a little bit about what the production's about?
The Glass Mendacity is a comedy based on the writings of Tennessee Williams. The authors, who are Maureen Morley and Tom Wilmorth with The Illegitimate Players, they have created these shows where they mash up... other plays, okay? So they have taken the plot lines and the characters from Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, A Streetcar Named Desire, and The Glass Menagerie, hence the title, The Glass Mendacity, and mixed them all up and made it a comedy. You don't have to be familiar with the Tennessee Williams plays to come and see this show and enjoy it to its fullest extent, because it's a nice standalone story as is. But if you're familiar with those dramatic plays, you can hear some of the same lines that are said in those dramatic plays said in this setting with this mix of characters, and it's comedic.
Yeah. Who are you playing?
I'm Amanda, Big Mama Amanda Woman, of course.
Can you give us a little hint of who she is?
Well, she's a combination of Big Mama from Cat on a Hot Tin Roof and, Cat, and, of course, Amanda in Glass Menagerie.
Which is, for people that may never have seen those shows, what are some characteristics that stand out from
both
of those characters?
Well, Amanda lives in the and Menagerie lives in the past, and she's in a situation where her husband has left, and she's left with her daughter and son, and has to see about them. And she has come from finer beginnings. And the character in Streetcar is or Cat. I always get that mixed up. Cat she's totally cowed by Big Daddy. You know, she's this whimpering little, oh, goodness, don't let me upset him. And that's the combination there.
Yeah. How about you, John? Who's the character?
I play Stanley Kowalski. Yeah, who you may know from Streetcar Named Desire.
And for people who don't, how would you describe him?
He uses his hands a lot. He works with his hands. He talks with his hands. He slaps women around with his hands. He's just kind of a... working class brute, pig of a man.
Yeah. And somehow in this, is he funny?
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
Those things sound awful, but you know, I like to think I put a comedic spin on it.
Yeah, that's right.
He does.
There's also
a tender side. Don't forget the tenderness.
Oh, yeah,
he's
tender. Tender.
Yeah, he is. He does have a sensitive side.
Yes. Yeah.
I have a wonderful line that's. Is he a brute like yourself?
Is he a brute like yourself? There you go.
Happily said.
We're going to listen to talking about a blast from the past. We're just going to play the song, and you'll have to go to the show to see how it fits in. But for those of you who are at least my age, you'll remember this. And to do run. All right, I'm not really sure when you're going to hear that again on KRVS, so we're glad that we got to play it today. And that was none other than Sean Cassidy, heartthrob of many gals from what?
70s.
70s. Who, I believe this is correct, went on to do a lot of directing. I'm pretty sure. Yes, I'm pretty sure he did. And I was surprised. Yes, I'm pretty sure he did, because I think Doc had done a play a long time ago that ended up that a woman out of in one of his classes had directed, or had written, and Sean Cassidy ended up directing the TV
show.
Well,
we're all going to IMDb it as soon as this interview's
look
over.
It up. Sean Cassidy, that's what happened to him.
Yeah, you guys do it. I'm too old for Sean Cassidy.
I believe. Don't quote me on that. But you need to go to the show to one of the characters. It's really tied into a lot of the teen idol thing. So you need to go and check that. You need to go and check that out, how that ties in. You have a really good cast, though, for this.
I am so proud of my cast, and I'm so lucky, fortunate as the day is long, that all these people have signed on to work with me.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm going to mention Catherine Schmidt, who's in the play. I remember the first time I saw Catherine in something, and she mesmerized me. I couldn't stop watching her.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah, when I saw her in Lost in Yonkers with John, I thought she was fantastic. And I later saw it with Mercedes Rule, the movie version with Mercedes Rule, and I thought, she ain't got nothing on Kat.
Yeah. Isn't that something? Mm-hmm. Yeah, she really, I mean, she's powerful. Mm-hmm. So the rest of the cast, you have Alan Higginbotham, too, some of these folks I haven't had a chance to see yet. Mm-hmm. I know him from another way, but Samantha Lamonte, Kevin Miller. And then Brick.
Oh, Brick.
And people need to come find out. Brick is himself.
Mm-hmm. People and Debbie Yardway.
And Debbie Yardway. Oh, I'm sorry, Debbie, and I missed it. You were right at the very beginning. Sorry about that. Who's been your partner in crime?
Absolutely,
yeah.
Not only on the stage and backstage, but in the audience, too. Very good theater runner for me.
Yeah.
She's been in 30, 35. Mm. I can't even count them how many shows she's been in.
Yeah. John, what do you look forward to doing in the near future? Do you have some other projects coming
up?
Yeah,
well, not for the rest of the year. I shut it down in the fall. It's football season.
Favorite team?
It's Miller time.
Are we at pro or are we at college? We're
both pro, college. No, it's next year.
Is it Saints and...
Oh, yeah, Saints, Tigers, Cajuns, you know, anything I can get my hands on.
Sorry, it's the Badgers, Packers, and the Milwaukee Brewers for
hear it in your
and
voice.
The Bucks, yeah. So I'll go head-to-head with you.
Bless you.
Especially football.
No, but next year Cody and I were talking about, it's funny, I'm out of the loop theater-wise. It's ironic. I don't read a lot of shows, and I don't see a lot of theater. I do now when I have a time just to support people, and it doesn't have anything to do with my take on American playwrights or the quality of work. It's just I get real OCD when I read shows and I watch them. I want to try different things in my head. I can't enjoy it. It's like work. So we found ourselves talking about things that when we were younger, you know, 15 years ago, we always wanted to do.
Yeah.
Like, now's our time to do them, you know. Let's do...
So what'd you always want to do?
Well, we were talking about Amadeus. It's a role, a couple roles in there that I've always wanted to play. And there's a show by Howard Korter called Search and Destroy. Kind of an edgy... it's an interesting show. But it's funny, we were like... Let's take this opportunity to do all these great shows that we always wanted to do and could. Now we got the chance, and we kind of forgot why we wanted to do them.
They're great shows, but
you know, it's funny. 15 years later, your sensibilities change a little bit.
That's right.
So I don't know. I'm just looking to get involved more. I've been kind of living under a rock for the past 10 years.
Comedy was your first. Was comedy your first love in theater or no?
Oh, anything I can get my hands on. But yeah, I did comedy first and. I like it both. I like comedies. I like dramas. You know, anything that I can sink my teeth into, I'm good with. Depends on the mood.
Yeah. How about you, Mary Gail? This isn't your swan song.
Oh, it's not? Okay.
No, I think you need to think about some other ones.
Well, there are not a lot of roles for people my age, women my age, I should say. Excuse me. Yes, well, I like both comedy and drama. It's a toss-up. If the role is good,
yeah.
It's a good comedy role, I want it.
Yeah.
I always want the lead, though, you know, kind of.
She likes center stage.
Oh, that's my favorite spot.
Okay,
it really is.
Keep that in mind, mm-hmm. folks.
Oh, yeah, I like that
Whoever's
spot.
Whoever's got one.
But anyway, no, but I really do. I like comedy. I like the dramas. I some of the best roles I had, I did Driving Miss Daisy. God, I love that. I did a cute little play. I was telling Jody in Wichita Falls, I was going through some albums recently, and I found the write-up on that play. It was called Who Was That Lady I Saw You With? I don't remember much about it. That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But that was a really good comedy, and I want Jody to check that play out because she may want to direct it one day.
Do any of the three of you write? Do you write plays at all?
Dabble. No. Nothing to mention.
Yeah, okay. No. How about you, Jody? You have projects coming up after this one?
There's a family in Eunice, the Kittles family, and they've been very helpful to me on the last few plays I've done. Mom, dad, three kids, and they're all very talented, and they all have a great eye for the theater. And they do stage work, lighting and sound, and their daughters are 11 and 7, and their son is 15. And that 11-year-old daughter, she loves the stage, and she often fills in. When I have an actor who's not there for the night, she'll grab the script, she'll read the role, and she'll do it with the same emotion and try and use the same inflection of voice. She's very good, and so I'm shopping something for her.
For her, mm-hmm. yeah. That's I would think that'd be fun when you have someone that, mm-hmm. gosh, I want to see them.
Yeah, she's earned it.
Yeah.
And she's going to be good enough to carry a show.
Yeah. Anything back, would that maybe be back at Eunice?
Probably so.
Yeah.
Probably so. They live in Eunice, and as a family, it's easier to do that in Eunice.
Yeah.
But, you know, much like the Glass Mendacity, you know, might be able to take it on the road a little bit after we close in Eunice.
Yeah, that's right. That's mm-hmm. right. When you get a good cast together mm-hmm. like that, it's kind of nice to travel them around.
And that's kind of how the Glass Mendacity at the Delta happened. You know, we had done it last year at Cité des Arts as a reading, and that show was all about opportunity. That was about what I could give to the actors who...
Now, why did you do it as a reading first?
I did it as a reading because I had seen it as a reading twice, and I knew that it worked. I knew that the audience would enjoy it.
Yeah.
And even though it's just being read, it's so funny, you know, so I knew it would work. And I wanted to give the actors an opportunity to just have fun, to not worry about a set and blocking and memorizing lines. I wanted to just get together and do a project where they could have a good time, meet each other, and work with people that I had been seeing on stage but hadn't been able to work with yet.
You know?
So it gave us an opportunity to all come together.
You stay fairly calm as a director?
I think so.
Does she stay fairly calm?
Oh, yeah. Very calm.
I'm curious how... Consciously, are there some things that you have to do that keep you kind of in that state? Because there are things in theater that can just get people going. I mean, stuff that happens goes wrong at the last minute. You have a lot of personalities you're dealing with.
Yeah. And, you know, y'all have seen me get flustered, but I try to be respectful of everybody. You know, like I said, we're all volunteers.
Yeah.
So nobody is in this to be yelled at or... you know, to get caught up in any other of my things, you know, my whatever other drama is going on.
Yeah.
You know?
Jody's only beat me once.
Once. So that's pretty good, actually.
She got a calm hand on her shoulders.
Well, you volunteered for it.
I'm curious. You had the experience, and this doesn't happen often, because you directed a piece that Cody Daigle had written, one of his pieces. And what is the difference when you're having to direct a piece with the writer present? I mean, that's got to be a whole different experience.
It was, because I sat behind him. When he came to see the play, I sat behind him and got to watch his reactions and was rather anxious the whole evening. It was like, is he shifting in his seat because he's bored or just uncomfortable, you know? You know, I wanted to be true to the characters. I wanted to be true to the intent that he had written.
Yeah.
And we had talked a little bit about ahead of time about him being available to us to come and talk to the cast and, you know, give us some direction and let us know if we're hitting the mark and all that. And he never really did. And he said, no, I want to let y'all create it on its own. You know, it's in your hands now. You know, you've seen a reading of the play.
John, you did the reading.
John did the reading.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Katrin did also.
Okay.
You know, so I studied that script for a long time, trying to make it what I thought Cody had written, and he was pleased with it. He did like it. He later told me, though, that he saw another production another company who did it, and after the third time, he said that company had finally hit it all the way that he wanted it to be hit. Hmm. And so I knew that I had not exactly, you know, but he didn't tell me that at the time. So, and it was fine because, you know, I knew that I couldn't.
Yeah.
Really.
But I couldn't get
that much into his head.
No, because that's his ideas of what that should be. I would think that would be, when we talk about challenging ourselves, that would have been one thing out there. It's like, all right, that was a challenge.
Yeah, because there was a time after I saw it, he offered it to me to do it, and I said, oh, no. And I had 20 plays under my belt, and I didn't think I was worthy of doing it, And so I got a little more confident a little later, and I got to know Cody a little better, too, And then I thought I was ready.
Yeah.
And so, then I think I rose to that challenge,
Wonderful. Well, you guys, I want to encourage everybody to go out to the Delta Grand Theater opening. The Glass Mendacity opens June 6th. It runs 6th, 7th, and 8th at 7:30 p.m. and plays June 9th, which is Sunday. So wait, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Yeah, Sunday. Okay, so it runs Thursday through Saturday. Sunday, June 9th at 2 p.m., and that's at the Delta Grand Theater in downtown Opelousas. Saturday, can you tell us? Oh, you've got a dinner theater going on too that people can call and find out about.
Right, catered by Crawfish House in Opelousas.
Okay, and they can call 407-1806, and you can get reservations for the show, get reservations for dinner theater. Wonderful. Jody Powell, Mary Gail Lamonte Devilliers.
It's a mouthful.
It is. Is there a middle name besides Mary Gail? Is there
another
God,
name? Oh, God, no, that's it.
Well, there's a maiden name.
Oh, yeah, I could throw in my maiden name.
What's the maiden name?
Bertrand.
Oh, Bertrand. Okay, let's throw that. Mary Gail Bertrand.
You
Lamonte
might could throw in Snyder, because I made Mary after those comments earlier.
And John Snyder, starting a new chapter of his life after today's show. You guys, really, thanks for coming on today. I really appreciate
thank you
that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We enjoyed it.
Go on out and see the show. And we are going to go out hearing another song from the show. Let's listen to Moonlight Serenade. Have a good week, everybody.
Hello, KRVS listeners. Join us every Friday